working all right. Sometimes I've had once or twice. Anyway, we were just talking about their friends, and there were a number of names that I wanted to remind you of. And the first one was Kathleen Coxeter, who I can't remember where I got the name from, but
well,
she
was a great personal friend of Pethick Lawrence's, and a very charming woman too. She lived at a place called Keeper's Cottage in Gumshaw, and Pethick Lawrence used to see her frequently. And her house was in walking distance from P.L.'s place, and he would walk round there, and then she would come and have a meal. And she had three children, I think. And
what did they have in common, do you think? I mean,
well, I think he liked her for herself.
Mm.
But she wasn't an academic or anything like that at all. And her husband, he knew really first and better than Kathleen, because they used to play tennis together. And Harold Coxeter was quite a good bit older than his wife, and he used to come and play tennis with Pethick, and then Kathleen, his wife, sometimes would come round, and they got to know each other very well.
Mm.
And then Harold died, and Pethick still, of course, kept in touch with Kathleen Coxeter. But she didn't play tennis, but she had a car and she drove, and sometimes she would come and take Emmeline for a drive and bring her back again.
Mm.
And she would cook little bits for P.L. and give him little birthday parties, which he adored.
Yes.
And they were very fond of each other.
Mm. But did he have lots of friends who weren't really very academic? And
quite a lot.
And what
yes.
sort of friends did they have, really? Can you sort of generalise about
now,
that?
Now,
there'd be a sporting group, I suppose, who play.
Well,
him.
Yes, he had some people, some friends who played tennis and that sort of thing.
Mm.
And then he'd have another set who lived around Four Ways in Surrey, and they'd go and play bowls or billiards with him, because he had this lovely billiards room. And that's where he had his tennis parties.
Mm.
But when I say that they weren't academics, they're just ordinary people.
Yes.
Nice,
mm.
but ordinary people.
Mm. Mm. And they had quite a lot of friends.
Oh,
like
yes,
that, really.
Yes.
Mm.
And they understood him well, because he couldn't, much as he liked people, he couldn't sort of tolerate them for hours on end. He'd get a little bit, sort of
restive.
Bothered and restive, mm. especially if it were approaching supper time and they hadn't been asked. Because he liked his meals absolutely on the dot, you see. And he'd get this sort of hustle. And he'd gather me up and say, have you done so-and-so? Have you done so-and-so? Which was a little pointer to them. It was about time they went. But they had a jolly good circle of people, and we all liked each other and got on all very well together.
Mm.
And as far as I know, Kathleen Coxeter is still alive.
Is she really? So
yes.
She might, you know, might.
Oh yes, well, she could give you loads and loads of personal reminiscences.
Yeah.
Keeper's Cottage.
Kathleen Coxeter. I'll switch off on it.
Yes.
Kathleen Coxeter.
That's right.
I can look her up.
Keeper's Cottage, Gomshaw. Sorry.
So they're really neighbours, aren't they?
Oh yes.
That's Gomis Hall, is it?
G-O-M-S-H-A-L-L.
Gomshaw.
Yes,
yeah.
Gomshaw.
Yes. Well, I'll certainly look them up and see. But,
yes.
You know, sometimes if you're trying to understand people, it helps to know what sort of people they like.
Yes, because he had them from all walks of life.
Mm.
Now, Mrs. Mazzilotti, I only ever met her about twice, but she was a very ordinary little thing. And
she was another Esther, really, was she? In
yes,
the of,
yes.
That's
right,
of it.
Yes.
Mm. Mm.
And of course Esther would have known her very well, but I didn't, because
mm.
it was before my time. I never knew the club itself at all.
Mm. But he kept up with quite a lot
of
them.
Oh, with quite
people.
A lot of them, yes.
Mm.
Great
mm.
number of them.
And the other ones I had, Isabel Seymour, now he writes to her quite a lot about religious things, really.
Yes, well, she is dead, and she went to a retreat in Gloucester. But she's been dead about five or six years, I think. Actually, I think Esther and I were the last two to see her, because Esther was staying here,
mm-hmm.
and we went over to see
mm-hmm.
Isabel Seymour. She was a very attractive woman. She hadn't a lot of money, but what she did have, she became a convert.
Did
to Roman Catholicism, yes.
I see. Mm.
And she left all what money she did have to this retreat. It was a very splendid home. It was beautifully peaceful and that sort of thing.
Mm. But they sort of taught, that was their common interest.
Oh, yes, that was their stamping ground, as it were, yes.
Mm. Mm. How did he get to know her? Do you know? I mean,
oh, that was long before my time.
Yeah, probably a suffragette, perhaps. I just
oh, she was a suffragette.
Was she?
And it probably was the beginning of this friendship, but I didn't know for
because, as you pointed out last time, they both have their own personal friends.
Oh, yes, and then they had joint friends, but they each had their own circle.
Mm. Which is unusual at that time, unusual now.
Well, it was very forward-looking for those days anyway.
I agree, yes.
Because, you see, there was this wonderful trust in each other that was quite beautiful. Mm. I mean, it's a pity that there aren't more husbands and wives like it. There was never any question
of jealousy in that
doubt or jealousy. Oh, no, and they were devoted to each other.
Mm. Because, you see, that's another thing that doesn't come out in either of the autobiographies, the marriage, really.
Oh, no, it doesn't. No, they would think that probably it wasn't of any interest to people. Mm. But that is the thing that does interest people.
Mm. And it's important, because if you're interested in the people who are active in the women's movement, it is very
important. Oh, yes. But, of course, all his friends knew of the deep association. Mm. And, of course, there are letters.
Mm.
I believe I've got a few somewhere.
Mm.
And certainly Esther's niece would have plenty of them, showing the deep affection between the two.
Yes. But so Isabel Seymour's one of his friends. So to speak.
Yes.
Now, what about
Emmeline was very fond of her, but it was Fred's friend.
Mm. What about Mrs. Littlejohn and Stella Newson then? How did they inspire my part in Changing World?
Linda Littlejohn, I think it was Linda Littlejohn.
Mm.
I can't remember how she turned up. She spent a lot of time in Australia.
Yes,
if I
think
I remember
she's a Commonwealth woman suffrage.
Yes,
person,
she was. And I think she actually was an Australian.
Yes.
Yes, I'm sure she was.
Yes.
And she sort of turned up, as it were, one day, and then, though I think that Emmeline had known her previously to this meeting.
Mm.
But it was only, as far as I can remember, probably a concentrated friendship in a matter of 5 or 6 years. And then, like a lot of things, it died a natural death.
But they were just people who were active in the women's movement, you think, both these women,
that's right,
who
yes.
said you must write it all down. Is
that's
that what
it, yes,
it is,
that's right, right, yes.
Yes, I see, I just wondered.
And then, they did the urging of Emmeline to get on with putting her side of it. Though, of course, she, as far as I'm concerned, she never really did truly put her side. She was too reticent, I think, both of them were about it.
Mm.
And Stella Newsom, she was a young suffragette, she'd been one of the young ones. And she had a little cottage she rented at the end of the PL's drive to Fourways. And she used to come down every Saturday afternoon, walk down with her friend Daisy Bedder, and they'd have tea. And she absolutely doted on Emmeline. She absolutely doted on her.
Mm.
And
she has this capacity to create relationships.
Oh,
like
yes,
that,
she did. There was, it was... I can't really explain it, but people... did. They absolutely adored her.
Mm.
And as I said, she had this sort of charm, and at the same time, she could be a devil when she liked, but when it had blown over, you completely forgot that it had ever happened.
Mm.
Well, I don't think really we could have gone on if she hadn't have had that charm, because it was a pretty tough life. I mean, the hours were long. There's no question of when the office shut at 5 o'clock. It didn't. It shut when the work was done, or when you were told to go. I mean, there was no getting up from your desk and say, well, I'm off, it's 6 o'clock. You stayed until your work was done.
That's another thing that comes out from what you've told me that doesn't come out from the two lies, the great backup they had from a number of people, not just you.
Oh, they did. They had it from oceans of people.
Mm.
And though it sounds, I don't quite know how to say it, but the fact that Esther and I were devoted to them, I don't think they would have done what they did completely with without two people like us anyway, because we were such a pair together.
Mm.
We liked each other, we respected each other, and one wouldn't leave if the other was loaded with work.
Mm.
we'd say, well, all right, you do what you've got to do and I'll do so-and-so. And Pethick was the first to admit it.
So you were a team, really?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
But do you think, in a sense, you can turn that on its head and say that's a tribute to them that you were a team, in a sense?
Well, it could be, because otherwise, I mean, there was no need for us to stay. If we didn't like it, we could have got out, except that, of course, it was a time of great unemployment. But Esther certainly wasn't the type to submit herself unless she wanted to, and I'm not the type either.
Yes, yeah, so in a way
that
that's
there was
the sort
this
of
charm, and we felt too that at least we were doing some little thing to help somebody, because most of the time was taken up with getting pensions for soldiers who had had a bad shot in the war, or you know, really should have had pensions and didn't get them. That was a great deal of our time was taken up with that.
He did say somewhere, I think in that thing he wrote about If I Had My Time Again, that thing, that he didn't feel so happy or didn't like helping individuals so much. He preferred helping people in general.
Yes, he wanted to help people in a mass, as it were. But of course that's a thing that's almost impossible, because no two people are alike. But he did help many, many people.
I was going to say, he did, didn't he?
Oh, I mean, yes.
He's underestimated himself.
I think he subjected his life, really,
yes,
to helping people.
Individuals as well as people.
Oh,
in the mass.
Yes, yes.
Yes, well, I thought that. I mean, I think he sells himself short on that.
Well, they both do. They were both too retiring, I think, as they sold themselves short on it. The Pankhurst certainly made what they could of it.
Well, I agree. What do you think about the autobiographies then? I mean, you say that they're too reticent, both of them. What would you put in then that they don't put in? First of all, the things that they did
do. Well, yes, the things that they really did do, and sell themselves, you know, to a better public than they had done. Because, you see, without the Pethick Lawrences, the suffrage movement would probably have never got off their feet, off its feet, because it was his money they had. All the time, until, of course, the split came. Then they had to get money elsewhere. And, of course, Emmeline being the treasurer, she had this wonderful ability of getting blood out of a stone.
Oh, yes, and also a very good speaker, of course.
Oh,
wasn't she?
Yes.
But again, they both write about the suffrage movement entirely impersonally.
They do.
They don't say, well,
because
I did that.
They've always said that they felt that what they did, they did because it was their belief and that they should do it. But at the same time, these things have got to have some backing. And it was his money, because he was very, very wealthy then, which sort of made the whole thing possible.
Quite right.
Then, of course, they eventually got a good subscription list, and lots of money was forthcoming. But there was a lot of money that was demanded for special occasions. Well, Emmeline, just because of her magic, she got the money all right, and if she didn't, Fred trotted it up.
But do you think, did he ever feel guilty, or did either of them ever feel guilty, do you think, about having their wealth? I mean, did they ever sort of apologise for it? Or?
No, but then they used it properly. They never had, they never lived a wealthy life at all.
No.
And if you could have seen his bedroom, both at Fourways and at Lincoln's Inn, well, it couldn't have been more sparse. It just couldn't. And he never had exotic foods or anything. He never indulged in any way. And he, at one time, I think, as a young man, he did enjoy a glass of port. And then once he had gout, and somebody said that the port had done it, so he never drank that again. He never drank tea. He didn't really like it, but he thought he could do without it, and he liked to keep as fit and as well as he could, and he did too.
Yes, I'm not saying that he should have felt guilty. I'm just saying that in the Labour Party there are a lot of people like that who do feel guilty.
Well, they
and I
say
whether,
they feel
they,
guilty.
Yes. And I wonder
I
whether
don't
they
know
like
that they do so much. But Pethick Lawrence never said he felt guilty at all.
No.
But then he never hung on to his money, because he certainly wasn't wealthy when he died. I was one of the executors, and
yes.
I've got a copy of his will on my desk. But they did so much with their money.
Yes.
And Emmeline didn't have much at all. She had her wedding allotment for a settlement from him, and she had some money which her father had left her. But frequently she would draw a cheque because somebody wanted some money, and I'd say, well, have you looked at your account recently? Oh, no, perhaps we'd better. And you'd find that she might just cover the amount. But it hadn't occurred to her that she ought to check first. I mean, she never went over the top, because Fred, he used to do her account, and then he gave me the job of doing it, and of course it wouldn't have been to my benefit to let it go over the top either. But so that they didn't have enough money.
That clears that up. One other thing I want to ask you, well, really about the suffrage generally, I want to ask you. I think it says in Vera Brittain's book, I'm not quite sure, that Emmeline, towards the end of her life, particularly after she broke her hip, talked a lot about the suffrage days, or was much more prepared to talk about it. Was that so? In fact,
she did. And I think it was because she had more time. People would go to see her, and she couldn't get about very well. We had the car. But up to that time, she used to garden a lot at Fourways, and it was a very lovely garden too. But I think that's quite right. She did speak more about it. But even so, she never said the Pankhursts were wrong and the PLs were right. She said they did what they felt they should do. It was because their conscience was clear by walking out and so doing, because they didn't believe in militancy at all. They hated any form of violence. Well, of course, it was rather a violent side.
Yes, it was. So she talked about it generally, did
she? Just generally, yes. And she was very, very disappointed that women hadn't made greater use of their vote and their freedom to vote. And, of course, I think it's a dreadfully sad thing, too. I think it's awful.
Yes. I mean, you don't appreciate things once you've got them. That's part of the problem.
No, but... well, of course, I suppose, knowing so much about it, I've had it on my doorstep. But, you know, you can talk to young people, and I've got a niece, she's really very intelligent, and she does all sorts of things. And I say to her, well, Susan, do you realise it's the Pethick Lawrences and the Pankhursts who made all this possible? She said, oh, yes. I said, well, you just haven't taken it in, I'm quite sure. And then, of course, I realise that she has known no other world.
No.
So they're not to be blamed,
they wouldn't
I suppose.
Mind, would they? The Pethick Lawrences wouldn't mind.
Oh, they never mind. I minded more for them than they did themselves. They felt that women should have the opportunity to break out of this surf business and this bondage. And, of course, women were in bondage almost then.
And in a sense, if women were always saying now, look what we owe to Mrs. Pankhurst and all that, that would be a sign they hadn't really completely grown up.
Exactly. And it wouldn't have pleased the Pethick Lawrences.
No.
But they wouldn't have been women libbers.
No, oh no, I'm sure they wouldn't.
Because I think they haven't very much dignity with their libbing. And one thing they couldn't stand, and Pierre, neither of them could bear anyone who had no dignity, you know.
But, so you think it's partly the sort of excited way in which women's lib agitate, so to speak, that they dislike, do you? I mean, is that what they wouldn't like about it? Or wouldn't they wouldn't like the sex aspect of it, the sort of bra burning and that sort of thing, or what, do you think?
Well, I think they would think that was just stupid, just as I do. I think it's ridiculous. But at the same time, I think women, as they're human beings, have every entitlement to express their views, whether they're wrong, right, or indifferent. I don't see that because a man is a man, he should have a last word over things. And the best way to resolve that sort of thing is to really talk it over. But so few people can. You get them with a fixed idea and they won't listen to anybody else. But the PLs just hoped at the time that more women would want to become MPs and do great things by being in the House of Commons. Well, of course, it's never happened that way. I mean, at the most, there's only a handful of women who are MPs.
Because equal pay has come about, hasn't it?
Which oh, yes, that's come
they
about.
They saw the beginning of
And, of course,
that.
They never really saw the finish of that, which is a tragedy. They would have been very pleased about that.
But teachers were beginning to make their way in the 50s, weren't they, towards that? The other thing I want to ask you about was the Suffragette Fellowship. Did they have a lot to do with that?
Well, Emmeline was president of the Suffragette Fellowship and for quite a long time. And it's still going, but I think it's only, I'm a member, but it's only just sort of just ticking over. because of course all the suffragettes are dying off.
Yes, yes.
And very few young people are interested enough to even know what it's about or want to know what it's about.
Yes.
So I think that...
But did she go to annual meetings then? Or
oh,
what?
Yes. I mean, oh yes, yeah. She turned up as long as her health permitted, you know.
So there was never any feeling between them and the Suffragette Fellowship that the Suffragette Fellowship was the Pankhursts and the Pethick Lawrences were separate.
Now, for instance, Grace Rowe, she was a very much a Pankhurst person.
Yes.
And so much so that when Christabel went to America, she went out there and lived. Well, she used to write to the PLs and sent them parcels during the war. But she came back to England and finally settled here. And became, though she still, her lodestar was Christabel, she still found room for great affection with Emmeline and Fred.
So there was never any sort of division in that way at all.
Oh, no.
That's interesting.
Because the Peels would say, well, the Pankhursts were entitled to their point of view as they were entitled to theirs.
Mm.
And as it was, as the complaint was on the PL side, as it were, they didn't approve of militancy, well, then they got out. They couldn't expect the Pankhurst to get out. And, of course, it was the Pankhurst, really, who started the ball rolling.
Anyway, I mean, he praises Christabel quite a lot, actually.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
he said she was a brilliant woman, because she lived with them for several years, you see, in Clements Inn.
Yes. So they must have known each other really very
well. Oh,
very
they
indeed.
Did, because she was almost an adopted daughter.
That, in a way, makes it surprising, doesn't it, that they were so surprised when they were thrown out. I mean, you remember they were.
Oh, yes.
They were very surprised.
Well,
I think they
knew them so well, or they felt they did.
Mm.
And I think it was that part of it that shattered the PLs that...
Mm.
These people could do such things. Mm. Just as I feel with Elizabeth Kempster.
Yes, for something
I mean,
you just
it's
don't
a
do.
Silly thing, only one's an elephant and the other is a franchise.
It's symbolic.
It's a similar sort of thing, and I think that is the most crushing part for the PLs that they could have, that
they
were duped.
Yes.
Because they were, in a way.
Mm. Yes, in a way, I suppose they were, weren't they? I suppose.
Because
you
see, you don't take people's money, at least you shouldn't do it. Take people's money and take their and use their minds and their ability and their accommodation.
Mm.
If the time's coming and you think right, though, I believe really that they felt the PLs were getting perhaps a little too much of the limelight.
Mm.
And,
yes,
they
I
used
agree.
That as a good
in other
excuse.
Words, the important thing is not so much the disagreement about policy. That's relatively unimportant. The important thing is your relationship between human beings. Really.
And Mrs. Pankhurst obviously was a woman who loved power.
Mm.
Well, Emmeline would sooner do things in the background,
as
she did, and she was a brilliant artist. And you've only got to look at the old votes for women to see the amount of work she did do, and Fred too, of course.
Yes, I quite agree. But that leads me to, I mean, you'll follow the trains of thought, really, Unshackled, the biography, you know, the sort of autobiographical account. Now, Grace Rowe found that in California, didn't she?
That's right.
And it was sent over.
She brought it over.
Yes.
And
then he published it with his own
edited,
money.
He edited it.
Yes, I see.
And that, I think, shows the bigness of the man.
Well, yes, because it's entirely about the Pankhurst.
Absolutely. And it used to leave me absolutely amazed that I think if I'd have been treated as they'd have been, I should have said, to hell with Unshackled, I don't want to be bothered with it.
Mm.
And the wonderful message he gives at the back of the book.
Mm.
So but I think it shows what a wonderful person he was.
When you say edited, he just corrected errors, did he, or what, really?
Well, it was just in bits of paper, you see, and Grace Rowe brought it over and was very friendly with the PLs and asked Pethick if he'd look at it and chop it about and edit it, and he said he would. One or two points he put right, because I would trust his memory against anybody's, and I think sometimes she gilded the lily a little too much, which he played piped down a little bit, but there weren't any big alterations.
No,
and then
I see.
It was tight and
I see, it was all in manuscript, was it then?
Oh, yes.
Mm.
Mm.
And then he helped. Did he help publish it? I mean, financially.
I think Gollancz published it, didn't he?
I think so. I can't remember. I've got.
Yes, I've got them out there.
Mm.
Gollancz published it. Well, he was rather a personal friend of Piel's, so he probably would have said, "Right, we." I don't, as far as I can remember, think that Piel put forth any money at all.
No, so he got it ready for the publishers, which is the same
yes,
thing.
Yes, and
in a way,
it is really.
Mm.
And.
But he thought it was good, did he? I mean.
Oh yes, he thought it was very good.
Yes. Because I don't think it's as good as Grace Rowe thinks it is.
Neither do I.
Because it doesn't really. It's.
I'm probably very wrong, but the whole thing seems to have been written for effect to me.
Yes. I think that's true.
I really feel it does. Mm. Sort of how good my mother is, how clever I am, and.
Mm.
There's none of that natural reticence that...
No, I agree. One thing I want to ask, he insisted, didn't he, on having a photograph of Christabel as a young woman.
Oh, yes, in the bonnet, in the lovely hat.
That's right.
Pretty hat, which he bought her, yes.
Yes. Why was that, really?
Well, he loved her very much, and she must have been very beautiful and attractive and so clever.
Mm.
And she lived with them at that time, you see.
Mm.
And he took the role of her father, I suppose. And
yes, she called him godfather.
That's right, yes.
Yes.
A lot of the original club girls of Emmeline's called him godfather. Mazzoletti was one. She would call him godfather. Another one was May Walter, a club girl. She called him godfather. He was a godfather to all and sundry.
Was it partly that he didn't have a family of his own, that he liked being a godfather figure, in a sense?
Oh, I think he enjoyed it.
Mm.
But I never really knew why they didn't have any family, other than perhaps because they were wrapped up in the suffrage movement.
Mm.
But I know I'd been married a couple of years, and I had to go into hospital with ovarian cysts. And Emmeline said to me when I came out, she said, "Does this mean that you can't have any children?" So I said, "No, but it's not going to be that easy." So she said, "Well, don't do what I did." She said, "I left it too late." And that's all she ever said about it. So whether it was because of her involvement with the suffrage movement or not, I don't know.
Yes.
But I think she would have liked children, but he never expressed any opinion. He liked young people, but he couldn't stand young babies. But then a lot of men are like that. They are rather frightened.
He liked them when they were intelligent.
Yes, really, that's it, yes. When he could talk with them.
Yes. Because he says something about how everybody ought to be able to play with children.
Yes, that's right.
In his autobiography.
Yes. Well, Emmeline had that ability.
Mm-hmm.
She, a little spastic boy she knew, I believe I told you before, lived at the end of the drive. He was a bad spastic. I couldn't understand a word he said. But when he was with Emmeline, they didn't have to have any words. They'd walk round the garden together, of course, before she broke her hip. And there was a definite rapport between them. They understood each other perfectly. And this poor little boy couldn't speak any intelligent word at all. But children just worshipped her. And it was really a great tragedy, I think, that she didn't have any.
That's very interesting, because that's very symbolic as well of what a person's like.
Yes.
But I wondered, actually, with Liz Kempster, actually, getting back to that, do you think they partly took her on because she was crippled and they wanted to help?
No, I don't think so.
Mm.
They were... We were very definitely needing somebody at Fourways.
Mm.
And she'd been introduced by Mrs. May Walter, this May Walter I'm telling you about, who had originally been a club girl and had kept up the friendship. And she had lived with the Pettigrew too for a long time. And May Walter introduced Elizabeth Kempster to us, but how she got to know her, I don't know.
Mm. I just wonder, because I think as she, recalling what she said to us in Jersey, Ed Pettig was awfully good to her about her being crippled and so on, and encouraged her to take exercises.
Oh, yes, he did. He was. But, as I say, I'm quite sure the fact that she... Because at the time, he felt that probably I'd made a mistake in urging him to take her, because he felt that she wouldn't be able to do the work demanded.
Yes, I understand.
And I felt that too, but when she said, "Right, I'll throw the stick away," and promptly went upstairs without the stick and came down and carrying trays. Mm. Well, there was no doubt anymore at all. Mm. And yes, she never said to Pierre, oh, well, I'm tired or I can't do anything because of my leg. Mm. In the end, nobody bothered about it. Mm. I never, in the end, ever thought about her leg. Mm. And that was how she overcame that. But mm. I don't think the PLs felt, well, we'll take her on because she is crippled.
No. On the other hand, you see, I mean, they help Esther, don't they? Because, I mean, they really bring her up in the
world. Oh, yes.
They a lot. I mean, they
well, of course, she got such potential. Mm. And she must have shown it as a very young child.
Mm.
And she was an attractive little thing then. And they knew her two sisters.
But you see, I'm just trying to get at this thing where they have this ability to get people to work for them and help them. One of the ways they do it is, in fact, by helping them. And
always made you feel that you were a person. As I said in our previous talk, even when I was just an office girl, they never talked down to me. And they would ask you to do things. Will you go to the post office? Not go to the post office. So that you, if you got anything yourself, you would think, well, they really are rather nice. Here they are paying you a salary. They could demand this sort of obedience to do what they want. And of course, it was a time of bad unemployment. You'd be afraid to refuse to do things. But even so, it didn't matter. They would ask you, would you kindly do so-and-so, or would you mind getting me so-and-so on the phone?
Mm.
So, it's rather wonderful.
Yes. I mean, you see, it seems to me with Miss Kempster and with Esther Knowles, they do a lot for them. You're the only person they don't do anything for, particularly. I mean, so
no,
that doesn't
apply
in your
one,
case.
You know.
Yes.
And I didn't.
Or is that wrong, actually? Did they help you in this way?
No. I mean, you see, I think they took Esther on because, again, they knew she would be useful to them because she was so clever and so brilliant. They took me on, I think, because, well, they wanted a young girl in the office.
Yes, I mean, you didn't
need
help in any sense.
Oh, no.
Although, of course, I'm sure looking back, you know, it's obvious, isn't it? You got a tremendous lot through being with them, but that was just because they were there.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, in the end, I was there. I was with them much more than any of the others. Because not only, you see, Esther was a secretary, pure and simple. And she used to think that I'd made a mistake by saying, oh, well, I'll cook your supper, I'll do so-and-so. She would never try. She couldn't cook, but she said she'd no intention of trying.
Why?
Well, because she felt when her day's work was done, it was done. Mm. And really and truly, she was quite right. So she used to go off home. Well, I've only got to see somebody struggling a bit or wanting me to help them, and I'll do it. Because I enjoy doing it. It's nothing very brilliant on my part. I'm made that way. So that it was never any hardship to go down to Four Ways with the PLs.
Mm.
And we'd play cards, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
So in a way, you become a member of the family.
Yes.
Like a family.
And then all her relatives were fond of me, and they still write, and one's in the Isle of Wight. I've been over there and stayed there with them, and so I knew them all. Esther knew them all well, very well, but not as from the personal angle that I knew them.
Yes, I see, yes. So, in a way, they give you sort of companionship, in a way,
An
enjoyable occupation.
Oh,
but they
yes,
don't give you any more than that.
No,
whereas,
no, they didn't have
with
to
the other
help
two,
me,
they needed help.
Really and truly, I suppose, if it's analysed, I helped them more by doing what I did because they were in need of my services.
Yes.
And I'm sure you won't misunderstand me when I say that.
No, I quite agree.
But you see, the first time I went down to Four Ways, I suppose I was about 17, and Emmeline couldn't cook at all. She couldn't boil an egg. And when supper time came, I thought, well, who gets supper? Because Pierre wasn't there. And so I said to her, well, what are we doing about supper? Oh, sure, that's a point. Well, of course, I felt that I must do something. Because my mother had brought me up to cook. So then I would do things, and then in the end it came second nature. And when I was down there, before we had Kempster, I would do the cooking. If I wasn't there, Pierre would do the cooking, but Emmeline never. And then when Elizabeth came, she did the cooking, and I would help her if I weren't very pressed at the time with secretarial work, but many a time I've cooked the dinner with typing on the kitchen table as well, doing a couple of letters and going to stir this up or that up.
Have you really? Well, you obviously took an interest in their overall situation.
Yes, I enjoyed their life.
And
no, I would suggest and say, well, shall I fix somebody to do this or the other? They're all a good idea. But they never thought for themselves for those things. And of course, Esther didn't. If she stayed at Fourways, it would only be one night, and probably because Pierre was down there and she went to get some work. But I used to be down there for weeks on end. I had a flat in London, and my husband was up here. It was during the war, and I hardly ever saw the flat other than to clean it. Then I had my mother and father living at Southgate. I went up there, so it was a queer sort of life. But obviously, it suited me. I liked it.
Yeah, so that sort of helps explain how they get this team of people around them, really. Another person who, of course, was around them for a time, you'll remember, is Mary Neal, isn't it?
And she lived with them for a time. She lived with them during the war.
What was the setup there, really? She was bombed out, wasn't she? At Littlehampton she lived, didn't she?
No, she wasn't bombed out. It was because of bombing in Littlehampton that she came down to Surrey.
I see, yes.
And she got a room in one of the cottages nearby, and she was another one who absolutely worshipped Emmeline, and she thought that would be very nice if she was down there with Emmeline, and we kept Emmeline mostly there during the war. And then she fed most times with the PLs, you
did
see.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Tell me about her, because she's quite an important person.
She was with Emmeline when, knew Emmeline before they even started the club, this Esperance club.
She did, yeah.
And she was very interested in revival of folk dancing, Morris dancing.
That's right.
And
when you knew them together, they were obviously great companions.
Yes. Fred wasn't quite so struck as Emmeline was, but Mary Neal was a dominant person, and he was. So
was she really? I didn't realize that.
Was
she? Yes.
But she was a kind person. I liked her very well. Got on very well with her.
What was she actually doing? Was she retired when she came to live
there? Yes, she had been a magistrate in Littlehampton. And then I suppose she must have given that up to come down to Surrey, because she was there for a long time. And she actually died there, I think, too.
Did she? Yes. Anyway, she lived in a cottage quite nearby. And
yes, she had a room in this person's cottage. I forget which one it was, but quite nearby, because she used to come over to Fourways pretty well every day.
Did she really?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So what did she do? She just ate there. Did she help at all?
Oh, no. Mm. Oh, no, she was a lady. She was one of the Victorian style.
Yes, I see.
And she had a brother, Theodore. But she used to go for bits of walks with Emmeline. And they'd talk and they'd write letters.
Did she dominate Emmeline? I mean, was it that sort of relationship? Or
no, but she was always right. And you see, most often Pierre was always right too.
Yes, I see.
And sometimes the situation was a little bit fiery, but he grew to put up with her, and he realised that it was one of Emmeline's oldest friends.
Because they were together, they were living together, I think, when Fred first met Emmeline.
Yes, that's right.
Because they shared
Somerset Terrace.
Anyway, I got the impression from Britain's book that she was actually in the house, but she wasn't. She was in a separate cottage.
She didn't live in the house.
No.
She spent pretty well every day there, but she went home to sleep.
I see.
And that was a room she rented in a cottage in Rad Lane, I think. It was probably about 3 minutes walk through the garden. Yeah, into this little.
So she really came in rather useful at the Second War, because
She might make afternoon tea, but she never cooked anything or did anything like that.
I really meant keeping Emmeline company. In the war,
Rather.
Which leads me to ask, actually, how did they cope with the war? Really, it must have been rather a blow for them, wasn't it?
Because Pethick was in town nearly all the time. Of course, he could afford to have his meals out, so that they kept his ration, were able to use his ration down at Fourways. He was only there for weekends.
Mm.
And they had lots of people who, if somebody was killing a pig, they'd offer them a piece, and they got through quite nicely, really. But he had no favours, and he wouldn't have accepted any. I mean, he had no extra rations or anything like that.
I was really wondering, from what he was domestic service and help, you know.
Well,
it must have been difficult in that way.
The woman who had originally come from the village, she looked after them for years, but only weekends then. She died. Then they got another woman who had, she was a Sudeten Czech. And she came over to England just before the outbreak of the Second World War. I think she saw which way the wind was blowing. She came over. And how she came to that part of Surrey, I don't know. But she and her husband came home. They had one daughter. Anyway, she got the job of char, being the charwoman at Fourways. And she, in the end, was very, very helpful. She was a big, hefty sort of woman. And she would help me bath Emmeline sometimes, because Emmeline at the time was quite hefty. And she was Liesel, her name. She was very good.
L-I-E-S-E-L, is it?
L-I-S-L-E.
I see.
Yes, Liesel. And Emmeline was fond of her too. And she was quite an intelligent young woman as well. And she was there for years. Well, she was right to the end of Fourways, as it were. She was...
Was she a sort of predecessor then of Liz Kempster?
Oh, no, she was there with Kempster as well,
was
because
she? Mm.
She did the actual charring. Kempster was a housekeeper, you see, did the cooking.
Yes, I see. Yes.
And helping to look after Emmeline, and I was there as secretary. I mean, really, I was based in London, but I'd go down on a Tuesday and come back on a Friday.
See, nobody nowadays could afford this whole
set. Oh, no, no. No, they had no idea what the setup was at all.
Mm.
There were two gardeners down there.
Mm.
There was Esther and me in London. There was a housekeeper in London and a charwoman, and that was four. Then down at Fourways, there was Elizabeth Kempster, Liesel Paul, Rapley and Davis. That was eight staff
altogether. Liesel Paul?
Yes.
That was the Sudeten German,
the woman who was a charwoman.
Oh, I see. Sorry, Liesel was her Christian name.
Yes, that's right.
I'm sorry, I hadn't realised.
Yes,
no,
well, of course, I hadn't explained.
Yes.
So, you see, he had a staff of eight.
Hmm. Hmm.
And,
But doesn't, the war regulations and so on, I remember of the war, you couldn't have that number of people around you working for you, could you?
Well, you could, and if you got good enough excuses, I suppose.
Hmm.
You see, Liesel was, she'd come over just as a refugee and was somehow based in Surrey.
Mm.
Well, she only did charring.
Mm.
And being a foreigner, she wouldn't have been welcomed doing any other kind of work. Esther was definitely beyond the age when she could be pushed around. He got me exempt, PL did. And Rapley and Davis were well over military age, and they were gardeners.
Mm. So the
and
really
then Elizabeth came just... we were still rationed, but the war was over, because she was...
Mm.
During the war, she was in the Channel Islands in Jersey.
Mm.
But I don't suppose, other than their personal friends, they didn't know of the setup at all.
Yes, I see. Liesel, were they doing her a favour, do you think, as well, to some extent? I mean, was it difficult for her to get a job?
I mean, she was very, very useful, and we couldn't really have managed without her, because it was quite a biggish place, and they had lots of their personal friends down there, so it meant quite a lot of people called in, not for entertaining from the word of feeding them, because there wasn't that availability.
Mm.
There wasn't that food available then. But she was very helpful. But I think... she had been a young member of the Czech branch of the Women's International League.
Oh, had she?
I think so. Mm. I'm not very certain, because
quite
even
likely.
It's a long time ago. Mm. But I think that's possibly how she came over to England.
Mm.
But the PL, apart from getting me exempt for any any services during the war. Mm. Didn't have to try with the others because they were either
overage
or else not available for that type of work. Mm. See, Liesl couldn't have gone into any of the services.
No. And see, I asked you that because he was obviously horrified in the late 30s at the growth of Nazism and so on.
Oh, yes.
I wondered really whether he actually took refugees into his house.
Oh, no.
Mm.
There was another one. I've even forgotten her name for the moment. She got out about a couple of days before Czechoslovakia was invaded, or Poland was invaded, and she was a member of the Women's International League there, and she came to Four Ways. I think she was there for about a year or 18 months. And it was mutually convenient that at the end of that time she went because, to Pierre's horror, he discovered that she really was a communist. Mm. But a communist of the right kind, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Mm. She had a brother who was training for a doctor, and he'd come over, and she was helping to keep him going.
Mm.
And if she, I know when she was paid her wage each week, she sent exactly half of it to her brother. So she was a true communist, really. Mm. But of course, that wasn't Pierre's cup of tea at all.
Mm.
And I think eventually she went back somewhere abroad, I think to Czechoslovakia.
Because he doesn't say much in his autobiography about what happened between about 1935 and 1940. I wonder whether he was involved very much in refugee organisations or getting Jews out or anything like that.
Oh, no. He wasn't involved in anything like that whatsoever.
Mm.
Just carried on his own way of life. And
Yes, that clarifies that a lot. I mean, Emmeline stayed in Four Ways, did she, all throughout the war, really? She didn't go to London
much. She only came up maybe for a day. We urged her never to stop in London because she was very deaf.
Yes.
And she would really have been rather a hazard for whoever was looking after her. And, of course, their flat was up 62 stairs.
Mm.
And that meant, if the need had arisen, of getting her down 62 stairs. So as she got this nice place in Surrey with a lovely garden, we all said, well, why don't you migrate down there? Which she did, happily.
And she stayed there all the time.
Yes, but of course it just meant that that was the beginning of my going down there for such lengthy periods, you see.
Yes. What about bombing and things like that? Of course, I suppose she didn't know that that was happening.
Well, actually, they had a stick of fire bombs, dropped Molotov bombs, or whatever they were called, in her garden, but that was the extent.
Mm. And was she frightened of air raids?
Oh,
I mean, did
no,
she sort of,
no.
Wasn't she really?
Mm. Oh, no, she was not afraid at all. What is to be sort of will be. And in fact, she was a bit ratty with us at the beginning, pushing her down there. She said, oh, she wouldn't be a nuisance to anybody. But we just didn't want her maimed. Of course, we're right in the centre of London, Chancery Lane.
Oh, yes. Well, you were
and
very wise
to get out.
And it
was bombed, too. It was...
Yes.
Heavily.
Did you have a shelter at Four Ways then? I mean,
No.
Mm. So they're not really worried about their
own
personal...
No, they weren't worried at all. And it's very funny because this stick of firebombs they had, we'd been having a particularly bad time in London, and Emmeline phoned up. She said, why don't you come down here and get a few nights' sleep? I said, it's not a bad idea at that. So I went down. The first night I was down, they were having... It was about 8 o'clock and it was just got dark, so it'd just probably be early October. While we're having our supper, this stick of things fell down and they said, you'd better go back to London because I brought this lot with me. But that was the only experience they had, or she had, Pettig experienced bombing, but he never seemed frightened at all.
Yes, he has this attitude of acceptance, doesn't he? Whatever's going to happen, you must...
We got him to push over to the air raid shelters in Lincoln's Inn, if the raid came at night. And then a bomb fell very close to this shelter where he was and blew a screen all over him. And he was very upset about that. He thought it was very infra-dig. And he was really very amusing about that because they didn't ought to have done it, you know. It was very funny.
But last time you were talking about that incident. Well, we were talking about the way you had to go up and downstairs
at
Lincoln's Inn. And how you had that medicine chest incident. Do you remember where she
decided... Oh, yes, when the thing fell on Emmeline's head, yes.
That's right. Mm. And in a way, it seems to me that Emmeline's a very odd contradiction, isn't she, as we all are in various ways.
Yes.
In that she's extremely selfish in some ways.
Oh, yes, she was.
You know.
She could be, but then I think that only emphasises her charm, because when she wasn't selfish, you forgot that she had been. Oh, she made the most appalling demands. I mean, well, really, I wondered sometimes if I was a human being, because I don't know how many times I did those stairs, and it was 240 each time.
Mm.
So you know, down 62 stairs from the office, then up 62, and then get back to the office. It was a repeat, and probably I do that 40 times a day.
So what she doesn't think about what other people are going to have to do to meet her wishes.
She sent me to the library probably three times a day on top of everything else that I've got to do.
So there'd be lots of whims, really,
she'd have, and you just
have to run around and do these various things.
Yes.
Yeah. It was probably because she had younger brothers and sisters to wait on her.
Yes, and of course she came from a home that had plenty of money.
Mm.
And they'd had a couple of resident servants. She'd never had to do anything.
And also, she doesn't think in the way her husband did about implications and connections.
If she wanted something or thought of something, it had to be done.
Mm.
Sometimes she...